The interpreter asked me a whole battery of questions. How many planes were on our raid? Who was the squadron leader? Where we came from? I thought I'd try to reason with them. I pointed out the rules of war and that I was given certain orders. I couldn't go back on them. I had many friends still fighting, and anything I might say could cause them to be killed. I asked him if he were captured, would he talk? The interpreter translated all that I had said and came back to me saying that he wouldn't be captured. They would fight and die. That was the beginning of the cultural difference. Yeah, there's some things I had forgotten, but we can splice it in whenever you got.
Okay, what had you forgotten?
Well, it's going to piece it if I do it. All right, I'll teach you. My shoulders and arms were still, this is going back to when we were first captured. And the undersides of my arms were numb, and there was pain when I reached back or up, when I took my clothes off and on. It was at this time we saw Jim McGivern and Bert Parmalee. That's when Chet and I first saw them. Bert was hurt. Something had gone clean through his bicep, breaking the bone. We were able to slip in a few words, but they didn't know any more than we did about the other men or what happened to our plane. The guards had Jim on the side of the room and were laughing at him. I had noticed earlier that one of the officers had taken out his sword and cut the shoulder straps to Jim's jumpsuit, causing it to slip to the floor. Now we saw what the guards were laughing at. Jim had defecated in his pants. Later we learned what really happened. When Jim jumped out of the nose wheel hatch, he dived head first and the next man lifted the hatch. Chet had already jumped along with Bert and Richard. Norm was next, and he noticed the foot caught between the hatch cover and the floor. He lifted the hatch and the foot disappeared. Norm couldn't pull the hatch fully open because of the effect of the centrifugal force, which made it too heavy for him, since he and Doc Tramer, our pilot, were the only ones left in the front compartment. They worked together to lift the hatch and got it hooked in the open position. They stood there on either side of the hatch. Norm said, "It's time to go." Doc said, "You first." Norm jumped, and that was the last time any of us saw Doc. So I was the only one to make it out alive from the back of the plane. All these losses hit us at about the same time. Each day we would pray that by some miracle the rest of the guys made it, and soon we would see them, even as prisoners, at least they would be alive. So then they took us down into the New Laws Court, what they called it. New Laws Court was the court in the city. And we went in and they started to interrogate us, and this is where we were before.
This is in Rangoon now?
Yeah, in the city of Rangoon, right. He left, "Where you come from?" I told him I could not tell him anything. He insisted I must tell him. I told him again that I could not tell him my name, rank, and serial number. He laughed aloud and told me I must answer his questions. "What's your age?" There was no harm in telling him that, so I was 20. They both smiled, and the interpreter leaned towards me and said, "So young to die, isn't it?" I told him that I wasn't dead yet, and I realized what he was driving at. He was really irritated and told me that I would die if I didn't talk. And the interpreter asked me all those bunch of questions that I told you before. He said that they would fight and die. Remember I told him how well we treated our prisoners, but I could see that all this talk made no impression at all. It was all a hopeless stab in the dark, and all I got was a beating with the teakwood club that most of the guards had as part of their equipment.
Where did they beat you?
All over your body, in the back and shoulder. I had a leather jacket on, so it really helped, believe it or not, boy.
What goes through your mind? It's hard for me to imagine.
Yeah, I know.
Say, okay, I don't care if I'm dead or alive.
Well, that's why I say now is different. Then, so close to all this happening, you're not your normal self, as it was explained to me, and you are in shock, and under those conditions, things don't mean that much. I don't know, they just, it's different. I don't know, I can't explain it.
Did you think, gee, I just jumped out of a burning airplane, what can they do to me now?
Well, they could kill me, they sure could do that. But being so close to the finality of it and having our friends having died already, it just, their threats didn't just bounce. That's all I can say, you know, really. They got angry and told me if I didn't, I would be shot. At this point, the interpreter picked up a teakwood club and went behind me. I didn't take my eyes off of him, and it probably saved the bone from being fractured. He began hitting me on my back and arms, but I was able to ride with the blows. I still had my leather A1 jacket on, and it absorbed some of the hits. He told me that if I talked, he would put me in a POW camp. After the war, I would go home. A funny feeling came over me. I just didn't care what he would do. I reasoned that he would kill me anyway, whether I told him anything or not. The shock and excitement of this day had affected me in strange ways. I had always thought of life as a very precious thing, and at this moment, I was willing to give it up. I had been brought up to respect principles and values. The war brought me face to face with the cost of maintaining those values. The cost may be my life. I wondered why these people were fighting so fiercely and why they were so cruel. How naive I was.
When they were threatening you like that, did you see them? I mean, I would imagine if they made those threats to several people, some of them they actually did shoot.
No, they didn't shoot any.
It was all talk.
I mean, eventually, then we found out that none of us got shot for what we did. And they asked me why I was fighting. I answered quickly that my country was attacked and I volunteered to fight, do my part. And I told them that we were fighting for the rights and freedoms of people and that his people were trying to destroy those rights and freedoms. The guards and interrogators snickered and got pretty mad at hearing all this. They reminded me that I would be shot, but they realized that I had made my decision. That was when the interrogator lost his control, took off his leather sandals, and started to beat me with them. He lost it. You know, he just got so pissed off. With sandals is much better than Nutik with stick.
That had to be painful, but did any humor at the situation?
No, it wasn't humorous. The humorous part was how stupid this guy was. He had lost it. You know, I'd really gotten him pissed off. And that wasn't my intention. I warded off most of the blows, so he went back and got his chair, then quickly put it down and grabbed the teakwood club from the guard who was in the room. I quickly got up off the floor and he started swinging at me and I couldn't hit back. What kind of justice is that? it's the kid talking, you know. Oh, jeez, the naivety of the times. The interpreter said that it was all fair since I didn't give any information. For some reason, he finally stopped hitting me and put the club down. I had bruises all over, but thank God he didn't hit me in the head. He sat down and motioned for me to sit on the floor again. He then asked an odd question through the, who did he think would win the war? Oh, brother.
What did you tell him?
I told them that we would win because God was on our side and that we were right and that right would win. They had a great laugh at this as tears were welling in my eyes. Even then, I was very emotional. I believed in what I had said.